Chapter 48. Vespasianos, then continuing his march, encamped between both Tiberias and Tarikea. He also enwalled his camp with more than ordinary care, in anticipation of being forced to remain there due to a prolonged war. For all of the revolutionaries were flocking into Tarikea, relying upon both the strength of that place and its proximity to the lake, which the natives of that place call Genusar. For indeed, the city itself is built like Tiberias at the foot of the hills. In fact, with the exception of the side washed by the waves of the lake, I had completely fortified the city with walls. However, not as strongly as the ones at Tiberias. For indeed, I had fortified Tiberias at the beginning of the revolt, when I had plenty of money and great power, whereas Tarikea only obtained the remnants of my love of honor. But the inhabitants had a considerable fleet of ships ready on the lake to serve as a refuge in case they were defeated on land. And these were equipped for naval combat in case they were required for that purpose. But while the Romans were entrenching their encampment, Yeshua's party, undeterred by the great number and orderly discipline of their foes, made a sally upon them. And at the first onset, they dispersed the workmen and pulled down a portion of the wall. But when they saw the heavy armed soldiers mustering, they hastily retired back to their own party before sustaining any loss. But the Romans pursued them, driving them to their ships. And indeed, launching out into the lake only far enough to leave the Romans within bowshot, they then cast anchor. And closing their ships one against another like a phalanx, they fought their foes from the sea who were on land. But when Vespasianus heard that a great multitude of Judeans had gathered together in the plain outside the city, he sent his son there with 600 picked cavalry. But when Titus perceived that his foes were very numerous, he indeed sent word to his father, informing him that more forces were required. But indeed, he observed that most of his cavalry were burning for action, and this without waiting for the arrival of the reinforcements. But there were some who betrayed secret dismay at this multitude of Judeans. So he stood in a place where he was audible to everyone, declaring to them,
"O Romans, for it is proper for me, at the beginning of my address, to remind you of the name of your race, that you may keep in mind who you are and whom we must fight. Yet truly, up to this point, there is no region in the inhabited earth which has succeeded in escaping our hands. But so far, the Judeans, to also give them their due, have staunchly refused to accept defeat. And if they, in their miseries, continue to stand fast, would it not be disgraceful for us to grow weary under our good fortunes? Indeed, I rejoice to see in your faces such admirable ardor. but I am anxious that the multitude of our foes may have inspired some of you with unnoticeable consternation. Let such a person reflect once more who he is, and against whom he is going into battle. Let him indeed remember that the Judeans, however dauntless and scorners of death they may be, are instead both undisciplined and unskilled in war, and deserve to be called a mere crowd rather than an army. But of our experience and our discipline, is there any need to speak? However, this yet is the reason why we, alone of all nations, exercise ourselves in arms during time of peace, so that in time of war, we do not need to contrast our numbers with those of our foes. What would be the advantage of this perpetual military training if we must be equal in numbers to those who have not received military training, even before we face them? But also consider that you will be contending against light-armed men, while you are heavy-armed soldiers, and that you are cavalry against infantry, and that they are without a general, while you have a general. So indeed, these advantages greatly multiply your effective strength, but our foes' disadvantages greatly detract from theirs. Now, wars are not won by great numbers, however efficient the men, but by manliness, however few the men. Yet indeed, small forces are also easily maneuvered and brought up to support one another, whereas unwieldy forces do themselves more injury than they receive from their own foes. Therefore indeed, Judeans are led on by audacity and temerity and despair. Indeed, by emotions which are vigorous during success, but are extinguished by the slightest misstep. But we are led on by a valor, and a discipline, and a heroism, which, while certainly seen to perfection when favored by good fortune, are never overthrown in failure. And not only this, but you will be contending for a higher cause than the Judeans. For although they face war on behalf of freedom and because their fatherland is in jeopardy, what higher motive could there be for us than glory and the determination that after having dominated the inhabited earth, not to allow the Judeans to be regarded as a match for ourselves? Nor should you forget that we have no incurable disaster to fear. For our reinforcements are numerous and at hand. But we are able to seize a victory ourselves, and we ought to anticipate the arrival of the auxiliaries now on the way from my father. For our triumph will be more glorious if unshared. But I myself believe that in this hour, my father and I, and you, are all put to the trial. Indeed, it will be seen whether he is really worthy of his past successes, but whether I am worthy to be his son, but you to be my soldiers. For victory to him is even habitual. But how could I dare to return to him if defeated? But how could you elude being shamed if you fail to show equal courage with your commander, who goes before you into danger? For I will certainly go before you, and will be the first to attack our foes. Now, do not fail me! Have confidence that I have the assistance of God, and that he supports my ardor. Be assured that, beyond mere victory in this battle outside the walls, we shall achieve further success!
As Titos was saying these things, a demonic frenzy took possession of his men. And before the engagement, when Traianos joined them with 400 cavalry, his men were vexed, as though the credit for the victory would be robbed by the arrival of these reinforcements from his father. Now at the same time, Vespasiano sent Antonio Silo with 2,000 archers, directing them to occupy the mountain opposite the city and to repel those who were upon the wall. And indeed, these soldiers, in accordance with these orders, prevented any who were attempting to assist the Judean army outside. But Titos now led the charge, spurring his horse against his foes. And behind him, his men came with loud shouts, deploying themselves across the plain so as to fully cover their foe's front. And by these means, they appeared much more numerous than they really were. Now the Judeans, though dismayed by both the impetuosity and good order of this attack, indeed resisted the Roman charges for a little while. But pierced by the pole arms and overthrown by the violent thunder of cavalry, they fell and were trampled underfoot. Now, when the plain was covered on all sides with murder victims, they dispersed and fled to the city as fast as each man was able. Now Titos, hotly in pursuit, indeed did away with the laggards in the rear, but made lanes through their bunched masses. But riding ahead of them, he met them at the front and charged through them. But he dashed upon the groups which had fallen one upon another, trampling them to pieces. Now in a word, he sought to intercept their retreat to the wall and to steer them off into the plain, until finally, by superior numbers, the Judeans succeeded in forcing a way through and flinging themselves into the city. But there, a new and terrible sedition awaited them. For indeed, the indigenous inhabitants, intent on preserving their property and their city, had disapproved of waging war from the beginning. And now, after this defeat, were more opposed to it than ever. But the crowd from outside the city, a numerous body, were only even more determined to hold them to it. So there were mutual angry recriminations from within, along with both shouts and uproar. Now Titos overheard this commotion, for he was not far from the wall. So he cried out,
"Fellow soldiers, now is the time! Why delay when God himself is delivering the Judeans into our hands? Hail the victory that he has given to you! Do you not hear that clamor? They are striving with one another, those men who have just slipped through our hands. The city is ours if we make haste. But besides haste, we need effort and resolution. For no great success comes without risk. But we must not wait until concord is reestablished among our foes. for necessity will soon compel them to reconcile. And let us not wait for assistance from our own men, so that, few as we are, we may be victorious over such a great multitude, and may take the city by ourselves alone.
As soon as Titos had said these things, he leapt onto his horse and rode down to the lake, marched through the water, and was the first to enter the city, soon followed by his men. But terror struck at his audacity. None of the Judeans upon the walls dared venture to fight or resist him. Indeed, everyone abandoned their posts and fled. But some of Yeshua's party fled across country, while others ran down to the lake, where they ran head-on into their foes. But others were killed, indeed, while boarding their ships. But others, as they endeavored to swim out to their companions, who had previously gained open water. But there was also a great murder within the city itself. Indeed, without discrimination, between the foreigners who had not succeeded in escaping and were now making some resistance, and between the residents who offered none, for they had avoided fighting in hope of receiving his right hand in security, as well as out of a consciousness that they had never taken counsel to be at war. But finally, after the true culprits had been done away with, Titos took pity on the inhabitants of the place and stopped the murder. And indeed, those who had taken refuge on the lake, when they saw that the city had been taken, sailed off, keeping as far as possible out of range of their foes. Now Titos dispatched one member of his cavalry to convey the good message of this achievement to his father. Now Vespasianos, as was to be expected, was highly delighted at his boy's excellence and at the success of his actions. For these things seemed as if they were the termination of a serious part of the war. Indeed, he, instantly going there himself, directed his men to keep a strict guard around the city in order to prevent any from escaping, and to kill any who attempted to do so. Now on the next day, he went down to the lake and directed that vessels should be constructed for the pursuit of the fugitives. But with an abundance of both wood and of workmen, the vessels were soon made ready.